Welcome to Inciting Incident, the SJW podcast YouTube atheism warned you about. Intellectual but accessible, skeptical but personable, and calm and collected, unless you really piss us off.
People choose the news they want now, but we
can
overcome
that. People choose the facts they want now. I don't mind being dejected and rejected, but I'm not going to be ashamed about it.
I can do that.
See, Joy, that's the beauty of argument. Because if you argue correctly, you're never wrong.
The truth and a lie are not sort of the same thing.
Good evening. It's Friday and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident podcast, supported by our patrons and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google Plus, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's bed radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, most tin cans connected with string, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster. We'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother. The DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the plate in Pete and Pete's mother's head, and any other podcast app that somehow escapes this list.
Good evening and welcome back to Inciting Incident. I'm just off the Gamcast, so naturally I'm already out of material. My name is Riz McCool, and joining me, of course, is my guest tonight, Chris Watson. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me here as I get back on the mic after a good 3 hours already on it. So why don't you take up some of the early airtime while I smoke a bowl and recover and tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast.
Well, like you said, my name's Chris Watson. I do the Podunk Polymath podcast. The taglines, the sentiments of the secular, sarcastic, screwed up SJW and skeptic. That pretty much says it all. I try to cover most topics.
Big fan of alliteration, I take it?
Yeah, I am. Podunk, polymath, and then all that. And I will admit it.
Anyway, please go on. I'm sorry I cut you off there.
No, that's cool. I just try to cover social justice issues and anything that comes my way that I'm interested in. But I try to center in on that. And of course, the secular aspect as well.
All right. So you have the name Podunk Polymath, and I can tell from your accent that might be a little bit true. So where are you from? Where's this particular thing originating from?
I'm in the exurbs of Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm in Podunk is kind of redneck out here where I am. Nashville's fairly progressive, but you go 20 miles outside the city and you're in Deliverance Town, so...
Yeah, my sister and brother-in-law live in Lexington, Kentucky, and it's the exact same way. They have an openly gay mayor, but you go in any direction, and it gets scary quick. So I guess that my first question would be, were you raised in Nashville? Is that what got you into the social justice thing? Or was it coming to Nashville and kind of bringing some of your past with you?
Well, I'm a military brat originally. So I've been all around, and I guess that kind of, if anybody's familiar with the military brat lifestyle, you go to different places, learn different things. So I've always been kind of on that leftist side of things, more, you know, liberal, I guess, because you find out more shit stuff. Can I cuss on here?
You can say anything you want.
Sorry. yeah. And I don't know. I've always been kind of concerned with the issues of social justice, I guess. And I had originally done, I had a podcast before Unbuckling the Bible Belt, and I went off there, but then I decided to start my own thing and kind of go, because that one was more hardcore atheist. This one's more dedicated to social justice issues, because that's something I've always been interested in, even before the atheism thing. So that's why I decided to start doing this. And plus everything going on in the world right now, I figured, you know, that's something we definitely need to concentrate on.
I definitely agree with you. Not that I've written a book about it or anything, but one thing I would definitely ask is, most people associate the military with conservatism and like hardcore patriotism. What was different for you?
Actually, the military itself, the people who are in the military, now, of course, that's also a stereotype as well, because there are plenty of people I actually know in the military who are liberal, such as myself. Of course, I'm sure the majority, I don't know the majority, but a lot of people in the military are that way. But typically, military brats who are raised in it are typically actually more liberal minded than their patrons or their parents or whatever, because they're just dragged along for the ride, basically, and they're the ones that have to deal with change all the time. And they're kids, of course. When you're a kid, you know, your mind's like a sponge and you're absorbing all this stuff, and you're having to adapt to different circumstances all the time. So you learn different things more quickly, but you also become sort of neurotic in a lot of cases, especially when you're already predisposed to depression, anxiety, and so on and so on. It doesn't help the situation at all. So,
all right. And that sort of explains your political stance. Were you raised in a skeptic family, or did you reach that conclusion on your own?
I pretty much did. I mean, my mom is Christian, but she isn't like, she's a really good person. She's a really good person despite being a Christian.
Here, Chris thinks his mom is a good person.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, she of course actually I follows do. The mandates or whatever. She's a good person or whatever. And my dad just didn't give a fuck. He was off playing softball all the time. So I was left to my own devices because I was supposed to be really smart. So my mom said, she was going by the 70s ethic of, you know, let your kid explore his own surroundings without too much input. So
a little bit different than parenting is today, right?
Yeah, no helicopter parenting here.
It's almost required by law now. Like, I'm afraid that I let my kids walk 4 blocks home from school that I'm going to get accused of negligence or something. So I'm always glad to hear when people are sort of raised with that independence, because they're able to think critically and deal with problems without immediately defaulting to some kind of authority. Do you find that in your experience as well?
Yeah, I don't like authority very much, just in general. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that's always been something. I don't know. I mean, I, of course, use nature versus nurture. It probably is a combination of the two.
And dealing with the military has, I'm sure, shown you many different kinds of authority. So do you sort of just deal with that, or is it something that averted you from it?
You know, we don't, like I said, military brats don't, we don't experience the authority, or I didn't experience. Some people have parents who are in the military who are very strict and authoritarian. My dad was never there hardly. So all I heard was my mom, and she was definitely not that way. So I didn't really get that, you know, that vibe of authoritarianism.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you know, you hear about some people who are raised in military families that it's like, oh, you're going to boot camp when you're 14, and then you're joining the Navy when you're 18, and then you're going to do all this, and it's like, you kind of got the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, it just depends. I think there are families that are that way, because, you know, for generations, you know, their families were in the military. Mine wasn't like that at all. Mine was basically just like, we went in because we needed a job, because your mom was pregnant, you know. So it wasn't like that sort of the lineage going on there. It was just sort of, you know, you do what you got to do to survive, basically.
Sure. So what is it that got you into podcasting? What about that particular medium as a skeptic and, you know, card-carrying SJW appealed to you?
Well, let's see, about two years ago, I'm going to say, probably. The first one I ever listened to, because I was like, you know, I started listening to podcasts. And, first, initially, it was like just a political podcast or whatever. Like Democracy Now! Appealed to me, stuff on KCRW, which is the LA NPR station. They have good shows. And I was like, you know, let me look for some atheist stuff and see what's up, you know. And the first one I really got into was Cognitive Dissonance, I think, because they were just so fucking irreverent, and that was right up my alley, you know. But I think the one that really got me, and he's not really in it anymore, was Cash from Atheist on Air. And he was the first guy I heard that sounded like me, because he was really, you know, country or whatever. And I was like, you know, if he can do it. Of course, he was a fucking... His charisma was out the window. I mean, he was great, you know. And he could talk to anybody. Anybody could feel like he could talk to him. And I was like, you know what? And he encouraged people to, you know, he's like, you can never have too many voices or whatever. So I was like, you know, why not? Let's give it a shot, you know. So I started doing, like I said, unbuckling the Bible belt. And then I kind of got out of that because I had some shit going on. And then I started this one not too much longer later. So I guess, like I said, I give all the credit to the GOG Disc guys and Cash, too. I mean...
The ironic thing for me hearing that story is my first guest appearance on a podcast was because Cash bailed last second. So it's kind of like, oh, I know that guy from not being there.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. He's kind of disappeared from the scene, but he had to take care of his own thing, you know. I don't blame anybody for that, you know.
Oh, sure. You know, it was just he was scheduled for a guest appearance, and the podcast who had him was just like, "Hey, anybody want to come on?" I'm like, "Hi." So I kind of got my start, so to speak, from the same way you did, in a direct way, of course. And we've had Cognitive Dissonance on episode 18 back before we even knew how to use audio. So I definitely appreciate Tom and Cecil, and I've heard a lot of very similar stories to yours about them sort of introducing you to the podcast of skepticism.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Absolutely. So now that you've sort of dipped your toes into the water of both skeptic and social justice podcasts, what has your experience been? Have you found that people are willing to come on the show and talk, or are you having, you know, a little bit of difficulty at first getting guests? What's that been like for you?
Well, of course, I already had a community anyway because of my previous podcast, and I already knew a lot of people. So I didn't have any shortage of initial guests, but I have actually met some people that I had not known before from blogs and other things. Like, the Orbit especially has been something I've been paying attention to. And that's kind of like the SJW blog network almost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Greta Christina, Tony Thompson, Anya Beulah. There's a lot of others I'm leaving out, I'm sure. Haina Dada Boy. People like that. I've had Anya on before talking about disability. You know, Greta, I'd love to actually get on. I need to ask her. But, I mean, they're generally speaking, when I ask people on, they're like, yeah, I'd love to come on. You know, I really haven't had that many problems yet. As far as people I want to get on, of course, is hopefully if I get more. Of course, I had you on, which was a big get for me. I mean.
I've never been described that way in my life, so thank you.
I mean, well, when you told your story about your book, and I had never heard of you before. I'm a bad person, I guess, but I mean, I'd never heard of you before, but as soon as I heard you on, was it the Gaytheist Manifesto's Thanksgiving special, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
And then you talked on there, and then you were talking about wanting to do interviews for your book, I said, fuck yeah, I'm all about that, so, especially I bought it and, like, read it in, like, one day at work.
Well, it's really cool because, you know, when I started my podcast, I knew pretty much nobody. So a year later to be referred to as a big get or a get at all is just flooring to me. So I really appreciate the compliment. Now, you said most of these people that you knew from your first time around, was there one in particular that stood out for you? Like someone who you could just probably do an episode with anytime?
Let's see, the person I've had on most, I think, is Matthew O'Neill, and not many people have actually heard of him, but he's a great guy. He is actually working, he's in his PhD program for biblical studies. He's a musician, he's a writer, he actually writes about biblical studies, but he's an atheist. So it's an interesting kind of way he's going. He's taking biblical studies from that point of view, and he's written like four or five books. And he's friends with Dan Ariel. He's written on Dan Ariel's blog, Danthropology, a couple times, more than a couple times. And I don't think he gets enough play. And he's a really good, I mean, he's a genuinely good person. And his books are great. So, I mean, that's somebody I've had on at least a couple of times.
Yeah, I first really noticed, you know, your work and what you were doing, because you go out of your way to kind of share a lot of different people's work. And I don't think that's something that's particularly common in the creators community. You almost have to beg for it, at least in my experience. So I think it's really cool that you retweet and repost and share so many different people. I almost go to your page when I need a source. It's been that interesting to me.
Yeah, that's something I've always tried to do, because I know I'm just some guy. I mean, I'm a hack, and I have the. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like a, you know, but I honestly am really privileged to see some of these people that I, great writers. I mean, I had Sincere Carabo on. I mean, he's one of the premier, to me, social justice bloggers. I mean, he's with American Humanist Association. This guy, you need to read his writing. I mean, it is amazing to me. I mean, I've had the privilege of talking to him and so many other people. I mean, I'm a hack blogger. I've written some blog pieces on my, it started out as a blog when I first started doing this, but I mean, I guess I just don't have the patience for it or whatever, but I'm a decent writer, but some of these people are just, wow. I mean, it's amazing. And I've had the privilege of having them on, having you on. You wrote a book in like, what, 6 days? I mean, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Well, I had some motivation.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that Trump's election would be enough to motivate anybody. I mean, shit. Ooh, I nearly threw up that fucking night. But anyway.
Well, it's been bittersweet for me, because on one hand, the next 4 years are going to be really dangerous for people like me. But on the other, it's sort of got my ass in gear. I mean, you know, I put out that book. I finished it a couple months ago, and I'm already 10 chapters into my next one. So it's been an unexpected silver lining of get shit done, I guess would be a good way to put it. So I'm trying to find the positivity in everything, you know?
I understand. I mean, I'm hoping there's a renaissance of social action that we haven't seen since the 60s. I'm hoping. Now, whether that's going to happen or not, people are actually going out and march. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not the biggest marcher in the world. I'm an introvert. I hate going out. So I don't want to be too much of a hypocrite about it, but of course there are different ways people can help, especially nowadays with the social media really does help. I mean, you get more people that way. So, but I'm hoping this kind of insight. I hope this is an exciting incident.
Oh, don't worry. We've been making that pun since the election. Like, we even put up videos that are like, don't get mad, be an inciting incident, roll credits. So we're with you there. And speaking of names, I know what the podunk means. What does polymath mean? What does, how does that come into play?
Polymath basically is, it's kind of tongue in cheek. It's basically somebody who knows a bunch about different subjects. Basically, it's a hyperbole, vastly hyperbolic in my case. I just happen to know a bunch of useless knowledge. So that's, it's kind of tongue in cheek in that way. You know, I read Wikipedia, you know, so I mean, it's not like I do read a lot, but I'm in no way some sort of Renaissance man or something.
Useless knowledge is my trade, my friend. I opened up GAM with a Jean-Paul Sartre reference. Like, me and my roommate and co-host are the, you know, king and queen of obscure pop culture references. So I'm there with you. So let's get into the social justice part a little bit, because, you know, I have a particular interest in that. Would you say right now, besides Clownface Von Fuckstick, is there a particular issue that's sort of sticking out to you, one that's got you more fired up than any of the others?
I'm sorry. Let me get over what you just fucking said first. Okay.
Clownface Von Fuckstick?
Yes, that's a beautiful... Wow. Okay.
I can't take credit for it. It's Jon Stewart's, but it's still awesome.
It's still fucking funny. I think one of my biggest things is BLM is probably one of my, and kind of the racial issue, closely followed by LGBT issues, especially this administration potentially going to roll back a lot of these laws. And I'm scared about, I'm really scared about just basically everybody who's not a fucking privileged white male.
I'm with you there.
I mean, anybody who's not me, and we're fucked. I mean, to kind of lens it out further, we're fucked too, because I mean, that's just economic issues affects everybody pretty much, unless you're fucking one of the 1% or something. So, I mean, but BLM issues have always, I get tired of, you know, especially you heard about the Chicago Four or whatever they've already.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you do the city and the number, it isn't okay. We get it. You know, you're trying to, the Chicago Four. Yeah. They abused a mentally disabled white guy or whatever, and they were saying fuck Trump and all this stuff. And immediately the first thing they go to is BLM. It was BLM, you know, of course. You know, even though BLM had absolutely nothing to do with it and didn't, as far as I know, I mean, they're not, they might should come out and say something. I don't want to say that, though, because, why? Because, you know, every time somebody says something about, you know, Christians or what, they're not always coming out, you know, defend, you know, I don't know. It's just.
Well, it seems to me that the opponents of BLM want to blame them for any time a black person does a thing.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, they don't do the same for white people, do they?
Unfortunately not, or we might not be in the situation we are.
I mean, the Wall Street bankers fucked us, you know, and, you know, the financial collapse. You weren't hearing, goddamn white people, always fucking shit up. No, you don't hear that fuck. No, ever. When do you ever hear that shit?
Only in jest, my friend. Only in jest.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, why are you putting, just because they happen to be black? And even so, what brought them to that point to begin with? I mean, there's layers here. People never want to go into nuance. Never want to dig down deeper and see what's going on, what causes this shit to begin with. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's much easier to be morally outraged and underinformed than the other way around. And I think just wanting to feel right and wanting to feel superior to someone drives a lot of this willful ignorance.
Oh, Trump, he rode that shit on in, didn't he? That's what he did. Yep, he's like, white people have been fucked over for too long, you know, forgetting the fact that we are the ones who have been, like, in charge for the last, what, 2,000 years or something. Probably longer.
Yeah, but people say happy holidays now, so persecution.
Oh, the CPC, the Christian Persecution Complex.
You know it.
That makes me sick to my stomach, actually. But
I'm with you. I live in a very red area, so I hear it literally all the time. There's a rail trail that I like to go to about 30 miles south of here, and you can't make that drive without seeing all these advertisements that have happy holidays crossed out, and it's like, it's Merry Christmas, motherfuckers! Like, it's so friggin' aggressive, Jesus.
Really?
So, oh yeah, it's really bad around here.
You live in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, but,
I hear it's Alabama between, like, it's Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Alabama in between. I think it's the same.
Either Alabama in the middle, or sometimes we call it Pennsyltucky, same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a super red area. I think we're about 42 miles from the Mason-Dixon line. So, you know, the South is just right there. So, you know, there's kind of that blend, because there's counties north of us that if I just spun you in a circle and dropped you in there, you'd probably think you're in Kentucky or somewhere in Appalachia. So there's this weird blend of cultures, and it just leads to sometimes yuppie people with super, super conservative, like, you know, Confederate flags and things like that. It's a confusing blend, to say the least. I'm sure you see plenty of that outside of Nashville, like you were saying.
You know, not as much. I mean,
really?
It's weird. I mean, I'm driving along. I mean, the billboards are billboards places and stuff. But, I mean, there isn't really many people saying shit. I don't know if it's because Nashville's becoming so ridiculously expensive that a lot of people are moving out of the city into the donut, the counties that are surrounding Nashville. And maybe that's kind of maybe making things a little milder, perhaps. I don't know. But I don't see as... I don't hear it as much. In fact, I actively listen. Now, I will say that I don't go out much, so that may have something to do with it. Or I look like a serial killer. So people may not want to say shit around. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, I don't hear a lot of people saying just outwardly, religious shit or bigoted stuff. I mean, generally speaking.
I guess I don't know what it is about me. I mean, even before I had the purple hair a couple days ago, I was just always a target for people to say things. I don't understand it. Like, when I worked in a suit store, sometimes I would still be wearing the suit when I went to, like, the grocery store or the laundromat, and people would make snotty remarks about it. Like, fucking elitist, or what, you're too good to wear. It's like, I'm just coming home from work. What the fuck is wrong with you? And trust me, ever since I got the purple hair, it's just, like, I walked across my own street the other day and someone had a remark. So maybe it's just that I'm big and I stand out. I don't know, but... I'll always tell all these stories and some people will comment, what is it? Why do people always seem to say things to you? And I can't answer it. So I was hoping maybe it was different for different kinds of people.
No, I mean, and I'm sorry to hear that, actually. In my younger days, I was more a target for people. I was a lot skinnier than I am now. Let me go ahead and say that.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I'm a big motherfucker now. But back then, I was real skinny, and guys would pull up next to me and give me the faces like, what? What? Like, they wanted to fight me. I'm like, what are you even talking about? I'm literally sitting here in traffic. And they looked at me. I don't know. How are you threatened by somebody you don't even know? I don't get it. Maybe it's because I had long hair back then. I don't know.
Yeah, especially in traffic where literally nobody wants to be.
I never understood it. It happened a couple of times. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's that kind of expected masculinity, which makes me glad that I don't have to pretend to be straight or cis anymore. So that part of it's at least kind of relieving. So we're coming up on the election here, well, not the election, the inauguration, and once we get there, I believe it's actually going to be the day this airs. What can people do? Like, you mentioned that white people are going to be fucked too, but it's really going to be the white people standing against this that are going to get the attention, because no movement is really successful until white people decide it's important. So what do you think needs to happen in order for all of us not to get steam fucked?
I'm sorry, steam fucked.
Yeah, steamrolled and fucked. It's steam fucked.
Okay. That day, there's the March in Washington. I don't know if you've heard about this or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Women's March, and they're going to be, Nashville's having one as well, going off at the same time. Hopefully I'll get to get there, and I want to go to that. I mean, but of course, people say, oh, that shit never gets anything done. Of course, tell that to MLK, who did marches all the fucking time. But don't get me started on that. I think people need to put pressure, and you're right, white people are the majority in this country, whether, for now anyway. I mean, whether people like, I don't necessarily like it. I'd rather we be more a multicultural society. But we need to fucking stand up. We need to speak out. We need to write our Congress people, call them, flood the lines. We need to get out and march. Just whatever you can do, whatever your strength is, because not everybody is necessarily somebody who can go out and march. It's not all about the frontline people. There are supporting roles for everybody. Whatever your specialty is, whatever you can do, especially nowadays with social media, there's a lot of people who are in tech. Get out there and do, social media stuff maybe. Or write, they're bloggers. I mean, you may not think that your shit, you know, it matters, but it does matter, because people, you can reach so many people by just writing something and putting it out there. The reach nowadays is just, with the internet, is, you know, is beyond imagination. So just do whatever you can do, but do it passionately and do it often. That's all I can say. I mean,
good call. Getting involved in any way. Like, I think we're going to need to see more of that. And, you know, not just sharing a meme. Like, you've actually got to follow up on this stuff and be heard. That's the biggest thing. There's always someone there who is trying to tell you why it's stupid and doesn't work. And you got to resist that impulse, because that's complacency and it does nobody any good. Now, for you in Tennessee, like, I think people have this misconception of middle America. You know, I haven't lived that far south, but I feel like people think, like, oh, once you get out of, you know, New England or whatever, there's no liberal people, there's no atheist people. And you and people like Trey Crowder and all of them have really been working hard to defy that stereotype. So what would you say is one or more things that people assume about the South or Middle America that you completely disagree with?
First of all, I want Trey Crowder on my show so bad.
I know. I saw your post.
If you ever, 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 ever can get, tell him I love him so much.
Okay, will
anyway,
do.
Anyway, you know, the thing is, I don't think it's so much Middle America. I think people, it's more like suburban. It's a little more like urban and rural, almost, because you're in Pennsylvania, which is technically above the Mason-Dixon line, right?
Technically, barely.
But there are people in California who are fucking conservative as hell, you know, and I don't necessarily think it's, like I said, it's a section of the country as much as it is rural versus urban. I mean, if you look at the counties, I mean, the county by county breakdown on maps of red and blue, that bears that out a lot of times. I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, it's more concentrated in the South. And I think a lot of thing people don't realize is that we're here. Liberals are here in the South, and we do try to fight. But I think the Democratic Party, especially in this part of the country, doesn't fight as much, to be quite honest with you. They don't seem to want to they go uncontested. There's a lot of districts where Republicans run uncontested.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. I mean, put somebody up. You know, do something. But Democrats have been given ground too much. And that's why, part of the reason why we've lost so many state legislatures, in this part of the country. Because they're just not willing to put up a fight. Now, Obama says he's going to try to do that. When he gets out of office, his main goal is going to be to do that, to put kind of turn legislatures towards more Democratic control. But when you got all this gerrymandering going on, it's difficult to get anything done. And I think that's where it starts, to be honest with you. I kind of went off the rails there, but
no, it's all right. That's what we do here.
I mean, we need some sort of independent council for each state that determines what the districts are, because that's the biggest problem. And these districts, have you seen the gerrymandering? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, they draw these districts that are completely illogical unless you look at it from the point of view of who are they trying to get in those districts, you know? I mean, they tend to group all one, you know, group for Democrats in one district, so they set them aside, but then all the other districts, they get people from their own side. So it's just, I mean, and that's a tool that anybody's going to use, you know. So I think each state should have its own independent whatever.
Yeah, I mean, my home state of Ohio is one of the more famous examples where they could not get Dennis Kucinich out of the seat, so they just lost the district. Like, it was just like, oh, that's not a district anymore because we can't win against you. And that's apparently okay.
It's absolutely not fucking okay, and it's disgusting to me the way they can do that. And I don't want anybody to get the idea that it's just Republicans that can do that. Democrats can do the same thing. And just because I'm on the left, I don't, I, I don't think a democracy works very well. In fact, I don't think it is a democracy if you have one party. Guess who has one party? Fucking China and North Korea. You know, do you really want to become that? I mean, no. I mean, I would rather have an opposition party that actually works like it's supposed to. You know, back when there were actually centrist Republicans and liberal Republicans, and that wasn't that long ago, you know?
Yeah, it does seem that the more access to information we have, the more we use it to block it out and only hear or see or read what we agree with. So that's going to come to a head one way or the other, and I'm hoping it doesn't lead to the negative consequences. But, you know, best we can do is just keep speaking out, keep being loud, and keep agitating, really, because they're going to do what they want, but we don't have to let them.
Yeah, just speak out. I mean, do what you can do. I mean, not everybody, like I said, is super talkative and awesome or whatever. You know, some people are just regular people. And just do what you can. Whatever you feel like you're capable of, you know?
Sure, sure. So for those who don't know, like, what's the best way to follow you or get in touch with you, follow your work?
I'm on the web. Is the my website is thepodunkpolymath.com. I'm on Twitter at at Podunk Polymath, Facebook /thepodunkpolymath, YouTube Podunk Polymath. You can email me podunk.polymath@gmail.com. I think that's everything. I've covered all the main bases.
That's fantastic, and I'm sorry my voice is shot. I was talking very loud, very long for, like I said, almost 3 hours, so I'm sorry if I sound a bit raspy. But it was a ton of fun having you back on. I'm glad we got to talk again. I was on your show recently, so more than happy to have you on anytime.
No problem. I appreciate you having me. I'm actually honored, to be honest with you.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to having you back on again, or, you know, coming back on yours again. I enjoy either way. So, very good talking to you, and thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Excellent. See you next time.
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident, which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast, or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
All right, that's going to about wrap it up here. I just wanted to come on and say thank you to Chris and, of course, Noah and Eli and Lucinda and Heath, who we will be meeting along with Tom and Cecil as you're hearing this, if you're not there yourself. So my voice is shot. I've done over 3 hours of podcasting today, and I am exhausted. So thank you. We will probably have some, if not all, of the Scathing Atheist crew on for episode 75, which is our next episode, our next milestone. We're really excited. So thanks, Chris from Podunk Polymath, for joining us. And we're going to leave you with the Cosmic Cowboy Sewing Circle. And on episode 75, we're going to have those guys in the house for you. So thank you. We'll see you next week.
Well, now we have that again.
That was good.
Oh yeah, dude. I just make it up, man. I can't do anything I've done before.
Two measures as an intro, though.
just as well as anybody. Who do you think that I should fight? I said, no one. I said, no. I don't want to go home with another black guy. It's too late, brother. It was on. And at night, Marco smashed the glass. And then he told son, I'm gonna kick your ass. Thank you.
The preceding podcast is owned by It's a Shameful Thing Lobsterhead, LLC. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. For inquiries or media, please contact P.A. Torres at patorres.com.